Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about something very rare, a Bears home victory. Haven't talked about one of those in like a year plus. We got to be talking about a Connor Bedard goal and his homecoming, and a whole bunch of other things to discuss. But first, like, thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is underway, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, we are both feeling a little under the weather. So listeners, if you hear some coughing and voices going out, it's 'tis the season. But if there's one thing that can make a sick person feel better, it's a Soldier Field Bears victory.
Something we haven't seen in over a year, and it was also the first time in over a year that we saw a Sunday noon game victory, because you got to remember the last two games that the Bears won were night games, so they haven't won a noon game or a home game in over a year. It was late September of last year against the Texans was the last time before today, so felt just good to get a home victory, and I'm sure the home fans appreciated it too, the ones who actually still sucked it up and went. I mean, it was a pretty nice day for it, but you know, when you've lost a franchise record, how many games in a row was it at home? But it was a franchise record of consecutive home games lost. So at least that's another Eberflus era streak that has been broken in a good way. Now we just need to win a game against a division opponent.
And before we talk about this game, is so I heard something on the radio and it jogged my memory. Maybe 10-ish years ago or so, the AMC network, they had a show called Game of Arms. And it was like one of those like pseudo reality shows where it was like about arm wrestling, where it was real arm wrestlers, but then they created these fake beefs and these arm wrestling teams. And there was one dude in there that kicked everyone's ass. And he was the shit talker, and nobody could beat him. His nickname was Beast. His name was Travis Bagent. His son was the quarterback for the Bears today, Tyson Bagent. Travis Bagent I'm Googling that he is one of the top three arm wrestlers of all time in the history of the world.
That's insane. That is really insane.
Which sent me down a rabbit hole. So then I went back and I found like episodes of Game of Arms where like he is just shit talking everybody and these other professional arm wrestlers can't beat him at all. He's just smashing them down. And then I ended up watching like a 45-minute seminar that he gave on the intricacies and techniques for arm wrestling. And the comments were amazing. Like, Travis is like, he's the chess master at arm wrestling techniques, and he is a master technician. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. So there's that. But he's really intense. So it makes sense that Tyson would grow up in a house where it was instilled in him that you put 150% into whatever you do. And we're seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, you saw pretty pumped up, calm and collected and confident Tyson Bagent out there in his first NFL start. You can definitely tell early on that when he was moving the ball down the field, he was signaling to the crowd, like, kind of get into this, and the crowd did. I mean, he was feeling it out there, and hey, he's a D2 undrafted rookie who went out, played an NFL game, and help them get a win. And listen, we can realistically look at Tyson Bagent's game today. We can put it in the context of what we know this is. This is your QB2 playing game manager mode with a simpler offensive scheme that involves a lot of checkdowns and pounding of the ball on the ground. And they pounded on the ball on the ground very, very well today. But he went out there again, confident. He hit checkdowns. He got out of some trouble and threw the ball away or turned negative plays into positive plays, used his legs when he needed to a little bit. And he managed the game without making mistakes. And for an undrafted D2 rookie to do that in the NFL, not a lot of people can say that. So you got to give him a lot of props. You could also give him the context of saying, hey, you played like a really good QB2 out there. We weren't looking at a QB1 throwing for 300 plus yards and four touchdown passes. We were looking at a player executing a simplified game plan and not making any big mistakes. And I to me, that says, you know what? I think this kid is fit for this league, and we could have a very good QB2 on our hands going forward. And I think that is a very realistic takeaway from this first game. Because I'm not going to jump up and say, oh, QB1 of the future. No. But I think that he did enough today where you could say, you know what? Maybe he does have the moxie and the confidence and the skills to be in this league.
I have a lot of thoughts. The first one is I see a lot of people being like, he's got no arm strength. And that may be true. I am just not finding the evidence for that. I looked at, he threw at the combine. He was invited to the combine because he was so superior to every, like, D2 quarterbacks really don't get invited to the combine. He
No.
did get invited. And his velocity numbers on his passes were right on par with every quarterback that threw. Bryce Young didn't throw. Somebody else didn't throw. I think only two quarterbacks didn't throw that were invited. But his numbers were in line. So I'm not sure what this is being based on. I pulled his scouting reports. None of them talked about having a weak arm. He went to the Manning Passing Academy. No reports out of there of a weak arm. I don't know where this rumor started. It might be one of those rumors like Caleb Williams is demanding to own a percentage of the team that he goes to. It's one of those rumors that's not true, but is sort of just become so commonplace that everyone just assumes it's true because they've heard it enough. So I don't know where that's coming. It might be true. I just don't have any evidence of it. But the kid has moxie. He has plenty good enough mobility and athleticism to play in a modern offense. He's not a statue like Eli Manning or a Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. He's one of those like Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers type guys where can he scramble? Yes. Do you want him scrambling all the time? Like
Lamar Jackson
Lamar
early
Jackson.
on.
Yeah, no, you don't want that, but he can definitely break off a 15-yard run without, too much effort.
It's kind of like Jay Cutler was.
Yeah, except Jay Cutler would just take all those hits.
Yes, that too.
He understands what's being asked of him. It's the moment's not too big for him. But he wasn't asked to do a lot. And I get that. You saw something in your game plan. You're like, we think we can run on the Raiders, and you did, and you ran very well. My concern is because it's looking more and more like he's going to start next week against the Chargers. What if the Chargers stack the box and we're going to make him beat us with his arm? My concern is Getsy is such a bad play caller that he's not going to design an offense where it puts Bajent in a position to be able to pass, because he's not going to be able to react. He's like, well, we plan to run heavy, and it's not working. And then they're going to start calling these crazy plays where he calls the same play three times in a row. And I just don't want him to put Bajent in a bad position because he's a bad coach. And that's it's a legitimate worry about, you know, Sunday night, because it's going to be a primetime game.
On the road.
It's going to be Khalil Mack revenge game. I don't know if he's hurt or not.
I didn't even think about that.
Khalil Mack revenge game. And the league has listened to, oh man, Tyson Bajent. Now I want to see him. They're going to tune in, and then Getsy's going to get him killed. My concern.
No, I get that. I definitely get that. And you know what? If I was in another NFL team, I would be tempted to say, you know what? We are going to stack the box. We are going to make him beat him with us with his arm. I could totally see a team doing that. And, you know, next week we play a Chargers team that's kind of been struggling a little bit, but, you know, they've got enough talent where they can beat you. And obviously, like you pointed out, Khalil Mack, again, I didn't even think about that, frankly. But yeah, I mean, that would be a fitting narrative for a Khalil Mack revenge game right there. You know, assuming he's playing, I don't really follow the Chargers as closely. So Khalil Mack had that one crazy game a few weeks ago, but that's really all I've heard from him. It'll be interesting, because the only time we've seen Tyson Bajent play in regular season NFL games is at home. He made his debut playing against the Vikings at home, and then he made his first start at home against the Raiders. Now he's potentially playing for the first time under the lights of another stadium. Now, there's probably going to be a lot of Bears fans there in Los Angeles, but you're still playing on the road in another environment. So, you know what? It's a concern, but I'm also intrigued to see how it translates over. Is it going to be better? Is it going to be worse? Is it going to be about the same? You know, it would be curious to see them, you know, maybe call a bit more with Bajent's arm. I mean, because, you know, here's the thing. I'm not really concerned about wins or losses at this point. Like, I want to win, but I'm not worried about winning or losing the game with Bajent. But I think, to your point, your concern is more about Bajent himself and the actual game results.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about Bajent. I'm concerned about the offensive game plan that's going to be put in against the Chargers is going to handcuff him. Like, Getsy has handcuffed Justin Fields. And, you know, today they did things that protected Bajent, and luckily the run game was great.
Yes, it was. I mean, Deontay Foreman was incredibly efficient today, which does piss me off a little bit, because of course I freaking had him on my bench in fantasy.
Yeah.
I'm still salty about that, but from a Bears perspective, I've really enjoyed watching Deontay Foreman play when he has. And, you know, you remember going to the season, there was an argument that he would even be maybe running back one because of experience, but he ended up being a healthy scratch for a number of games. And now with both Roshan and Herbert out, this has been his chance to, you know, make himself known again, because he was a fairly reputable back before. He's been around a few years, you know, kind of playing and showing him, hey, you know, remember, I'm a veteran. This is what I have. And he's done that. He really has.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy that we thought we were getting, where he hits that hole and then he's going to carry defenders for 4, 5, 6 yards. And he did that today. He just and when he couldn't carry him, he hurdled him.
Yeah.
You know, he played an excellent game, and I loved it. Loved every second of it. And, you know, I'm going to take a guess. Roshan's probably back next week, because he had a concussion, and it's been That'll be what, 1, 2, 3 weeks. I'm assuming he'll be back.
If he's not, then it is going to be a little concerning.
Yes, if he's not. Herbert is, I don't know when he's eligible next. When's he eligible to return?
Well, he's on IR, so we're not going to see him.
Yeah,
next
but
week.
I don't remember when they put him on. Is this the second
game?
It
was the Washington game he got hurt.
Okay. All right.
So not last week, but the week before.
Okay. So he's got 2 more weeks.
Yeah.
But I like Darrington Evans. I think he's a nice change of pace from Deontay Foreman, but it'll be nice to have Roschon Johnson back because he's a far superior running back. But yeah, I mean, I just think that you're going to have to go into this Chargers game. Not saying the Chargers are world beaters, but I think you're going to have to have a more balanced attack in order to beat them.
I agree. I mean, you know, here's the thing. We can talk about this a little bit too, right? Despite coming into this game 3-3, the Raiders they're a mess.
Yeah, the Raiders are a hot mess. I mean, their coach has to be worried about his job security.
McDaniels has just like failed up, it seems like.
I mean, that's the Bill Belichick effect. Is Bill Belichick has no coaching tree.
Remember Matt Patricia in Detroit?
He was terrible.
Yeah. I mean,
embarrassment. But Bill Belichick doesn't have a coaching tree. It's been him, and he is part of somebody else's tree. He's part of the Bill Parcells tree. And, you know, they just, you know, you have other coaches like the Shanahan tree. You know, you have, you know, a bunch of, who's the guy who was in Green Bay, where the Andy Reid came from, his tree. He kind of looked like Andy Reid, Mike Holmgren. You know, you have all these guys that just have a tree where you've seen numerous coaches come in and succeed. And Josh McDaniel has been the beneficiary of playing on a Bill Belichick coach team with Tom Brady. And he's not a good coach.
No. And I mean, you saw the team today. Obviously, you didn't have your starting quarterback, but, you know, Jimmy G, I don't think has been a world beater either. But, you know, former Bear legend Brian Hoyer, he's got to be done, right? He's old and just not good anymore. I mean, especially at the end there when you saw him throw the pick six, you're just like, yeesh, no bueno. But you know what? They came in 3-3, and, you know, the Bears took care of business, and you did it in a smart way. You know, you went out there, pounded the football, and the great thing about some of those drives the Bears had pounding the football is it ate up so much clock.
That was huge. That was huge to keep that defense fresh and take away possessions from the Raiders' offense. It was huge. And the longer that offense stays out on the field, especially when you're running the ball, your offensive line usually gets more dominant over the defensive line because that defensive line just gets tired. And, you know, the Bears were able to do that. Tevin, when, you know, good move. Tevin Jenkins on the right side with Darnell Wright, and you form a formidable right side to run behind.
That actually worked. I was kind of annoyed by it at first, but it ended up actually working out. We're not going to sit here on this show bemoaning about the offensive line today because there really wasn't a reason to.
I mean,
not saying it was perfect. You had some penalties, but it didn't impact you winning the game.
I mean, you did see that Bagent was that pocket was collapsing pretty quick, but he gets rid of the ball really quickly. And so you know, other than Max Crosby, you really didn't have anybody blowing it up. But
I don't want to say it was great, but you know, it was efficient on the run game, and it didn't cost you anything. I mean, it wasn't like what we saw with Cody Whitehair snapping the ball over Justin Fields' head last week, or when on the first play of the game, you get absolutely blown up like last week. So at least it was held together enough where it didn't cause too many problems. And I will say too, is that the Bears were penalized a lot today, but I think some of those penalties were kind of ticky tacky.
The one pass interference was absolutely positively not a pass interference.
Yeah.
And the other one was so ticky tack. It was annoying.
There was even a hold on Larry Borum that wasn't really anything.
I wouldn't have called that, but I probably would have yelled the other way. The other two, if they would have gone, against the Raiders in the Bears' favor, those pass interference, I would have been like, oof, we got away with one there. The holding call, the one holding call against Borum, I would have been, if that would have happened with Ngakoue, I'd have been like, oh my God, hold. So I'll let that one slide, but
we've seen worse not get called.
Oh yeah. I mean, we had Khalil Mack here for several years, and that guy got held way worse on every play. But I'm looking here. So the Raiders are towards the bottom as far as run defenses. They give up on average 122 yards a game.
That was pretty evident today.
Chargers are middle of the road. They're right dead smack in the middle, and they give up 103 yards a game. So, I mean, you still should be able to run on them a little bit, but I still think you're going to have to do some passing on them.
I agree.
Especially when you look and they're the worst pass defense in the league. They are dead last,
really?
32nd.
Wow.
Wait, make sure this is this year. Yeah. It's not including today's game.
But so going into this week, they were the worst. But yes, obviously they didn't get any better. I mean, they just lost to the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I think Mahomes had 8.2 billion yards passing.
Yeah, well, that's pretty common.
Yeah, when you're worst pass defense in the league and you go against Patrick Mahomes, it's not going to get better.
No.
He threw for 424 yards and 4 touchdowns. So, yeah.
How many yards?
424.
Wow.
And 4 touchdowns.
So, yeah, I'm going to safely assume that passing rank is going to stay the same, a.k.a. the worst for the Chargers.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have to take advantage there. Wow. You know what else crazy? I want to get back to the Bajan thing in a little bit, but there's something I want to say about the Bears, the defense. They are not getting to the quarterback. They're still not getting to the quarterback. But there's one thing I said going into the season that said, I don't think the pass rush is going to be that much better this year, maybe a little bit than more than last year, which a little bit, half a quarter of a step. But I said, if the Bears can shore up that run defense, this might be a halfway decent defense. And the first couple weeks were atrocious. But would you like to know, going into this game, where the Bears were ranked in rushing defense, rushing yards allowed per game?
Going into this week.
Going into today's game.
Like 11th?
8th.
I just don't feel like teams run against the Bears very much. Are you talking yards per game?
Rushing yards allowed, average per game, the average number of rushing yards allowed per game.
Yeah, I'm just asking this. I'm not trying to discredit anything, but Minnesota barely ran the ball against the Bears. I don't think Washington ran the ball once in the second half against the Bears. Is it that we're good at stopping the run, or do teams just not do it against us? Because they know the quarterback can sit in the pocket untouched, and they can pick on their receivers that are out there in zone coverage.
I mean, maybe it's a little column A, a little column B. Why go against their strength, even if their strength is not that great when there's a gaping weakness? But honestly, it's yeah, the Bears are 29th in passing defense. But I'm as we've seen since Eberflus took over play calling on defense, the defense has gotten a whole lot better. Granted, they played lesser opponents, but still, we're seeing baby steps here.
No, I agree. It definitely looks better than it did before.
Is honestly, that's all I wanted to see is young players get better, and I wanted to see the defense not just get gashed in the run game.
It also does help that you have your secondary healthier again. The fact that you have Jalen Johnson, who had two picks today, healthy, and that does help.
I mean, Jalen Johnson had a good game. I mean, I know they threw a couple flags against him, but it didn't help that he had the bright orange sleeves. So anything he did was very evident. But he had a really good game.
Yeah, I mean that pick six all but sealed the game.
But that's what I wanted to see is, if you stop the run, you force them to pass more, and you give opportunities for your young defensive backs to make plays. And we're starting to see that is they're not getting these gashing runs, they're setting up third and mediums, third and longs, and these young defenders are growing into their cleats, and you're starting to see them make play breakups. Now you're starting to see interceptions, and interceptions are a lot like home runs. They come in bunches.
Yeah, I mean, you had three today. You had Tremaine Edmonds had the first one, and then you had the ones by Jalen Johnson. Brisker almost had a pick six. He really
Oh,
should have come up with that.
he should have. Yeah, I was about to say there should have been four.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't be a good defense, at least be able to stop the run.
Yeah, and I think that it's fair to say that you can sit down and watch this defense, and it just looks like they're playing harder. Like, I know it sounds cliche and whatnot, but I just feel like it looks like they're playing harder and that there's a bit more intensity. I mean, they played good defensively last week against the Vikings. They kept the Bears in that game the entire way.
Yeah. I mean, we look, the first week gashed. Second week gashed. Third week gashed. Fourth week was just they imploded at the end. Did a good job against the Commanders. Did a good job against the Vikings. Did a good job against the Raiders. And it's small sample size. It's only half your games, but it's the most recent half of your games. We'll see what happens against the Chargers. The Chargers, we expect them to win this game, but they're only a two-win game too.
Yeah, I mean they're a team where you can play and say, listen, this isn't a completely unwinnable game here. And it's going to be, I'd say, a nice test because, Herbert might not be playing right now to the level that you would hope to be playing if you're a Chargers fan, but he's still much, much better than, facing the current version of Brian Hoyer and big difference there, but it'll be a nice test for this team. And if they can go out there and compete and put together another nice game and gives themselves a chance to win on the road, you try to take those baby steps and take what you can get, because there's going to be instances in the season where you're going to have more, much tougher tests. And if you want to have a chance to improve, you got to step up. You got to take steps. You got to see defense play better, which it has. You want to see offense play better. You want to see the coaching better. I mean, it's all these things where you go week to week where, you know, sometimes you see linear progression and then sometimes it is just back and forth, up and down. And it's frustrating at times because you look at the offensive games you had against the Broncos and against the Commanders, and then you stepped back last week against the Vikings. So you want to see just more gradual growth, and you have an opportunity to get some of that growth next week against a team that might not be playing great, but is definitely a step above in competition compared to the opponent you had this week.
You know, the Bears are tied for, they're 1, 2, 3, 4. They're the number 6 rushing team in the NFL.
Old-fashioned football, my friends.
Old-fashioned football. Where are they on passing? They are ahead of the Jets, the Browns, the Titans, and the Giants.
So not the worst.
No, I mean, the Jets are supremely planted in the last place spot. But they've got a comfortable lead over the other teams, so good.
Yay.
Yeah. So really, is if you can limit the run, force them to be one dimensional, it allows you to do other things when you know that they can easily run against you or pass. It creates problems, especially when you can't rush the passer. You're seeing more timed blitzes. Are the blitzes getting home? No, but they're at least rushing the quarterback a little bit. You're seeing tighter coverage, and so I mean, all in all, it's a much better defense with Eberflus calling the plays, but there's still a lot of room to improve.
We got to give some props to Tyrique Stevenson today, right? He made some nice plays.
Absolutely.
Best game as a Bear, I'd say.
Absolutely. And when Smith comes back from injury and you have all Jalen Johnson and Stevenson and Smith all playing healthy, that's a pretty formidable cornerback group. You know, it makes me wonder if the Bears view Jalen Johnson as expendable. Not saying that I want to trade him, but yeah.
Despite him flashing after that that touchdown, pay me my money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've eventually got to pay somebody. But if you've got two guys in the wings that are look really good, you know, do you pony up $20 million a year for Jalen Johnson? I like him. I would love to see him here long term. It's the injuries, man. That's what makes me wonder. It's the injuries, and it gives. But you have. You, as the Bears organization, gain leverage because you're like, we don't need him. You could trade him. You know, the trade deadline's in like, what, 10 days?
I think the trade deadline is too damn early in this league.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, you've got to make sure that it's not so late that you're like, is there some sort of collusion where, you know, some shitty team is trading an awesome player, wink nod kind of thing to a really good team that they're buddies with, the GMs are buddies. You know, you don't want anything like that. I have to say that it would, but if you get too late, but yeah, this is a little early.
I think right around Thanksgiving would be a good time to have the trade deadline.
I mean, let's see, you got 18 week season. I would say like week 11, which would be, what's NFL week 11? NFL week 11. That would be November 19th.
Yeah, right around Thanksgiving.
Okay, that's not bad. Yeah, like the week before Thanksgiving. I'm cool with that. It gives you a long enough time for teams sort of know where their path is. Allows a little more time for teams that are in the hunt to evaluate where they are with injuries or, you know, the need for better play. Seems fair.
Maybe gives the players themselves to build themselves a little more value. I don't know. But yeah, I think pushing it back a few weeks would be beneficial.
I just, you know, who else on the Bears would be a legitimate possibility for a trade? I think if their running back room was healthy, I would think that Deontay Foreman would be a trade asset. But with sure. The injuries, you can't afford to trade him.
No.
Maybe Darnell Mooney.
Sure.
Nobody on offensive line. Defense, nobody on the defensive line. I'm not going to trade the linebackers. Then Jalen Johnson, that's really it.
Someone want to take Eddie Jackson off our hands?
That was going to be a point I was going to bring up later, but let's get to it. There's 0% chance Eddie Jackson is a Bear next year, right?
Yeah, I think we're at the end.
And probably Cody Whitehair too?
Yeah. Would that now mean that everyone from the 2018 team is gone? Or do we still have the same long snapper?
Unless we bring Robbie Gould back.
He wasn't on 2018.
Oh, yeah, he was gone by then. Yeah, because
Cody Parkey.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we must add the same long snapper, right? Bears long snapper. Patrick Scales.
Yeah, was he on that 2018 team?
Yeah. Yep.
So long snappers are people too.
I know. Pat Manelli.
Patrick Manelli.
Let's see. Old Bears. Let's look at the 2024 cap situation.
Well, at least we know for one thing, it's not going to be Ryan Pace level bad.
Oh, no. The cap
far space. From it. The cap far, space. Far from it.
Right now, for 2024, the Bears, as it currently stands, have over $110 million in cap space.
That's a lot.
Now, let's say they cut Eddie Jackson. And let's say they cut Cody Whitehair. That puts them at $132 million. $132 million.
Give all that money to Tyson Bagent.
You gain $22 million of cap space by cutting dead weight.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Jackson can't stay healthy, and I think we've seen the prime years come and go for Cody Whitehair. And even if he's still like an okay guard, it's replaceable.
Oh, yeah.
Especially absolutely. For the money you're paying.
Yeah, you can replace him. Then really, that's it. Those are your cuts. I mean, as far as gaining cap space. I mean, I guess you could cut DeMarcus Walker. He hasn't really done anything, but that's not saving you a ton of space, a couple million dollars. Yeah, that's now the flip side. What if I'm going to throw this out there?
Oh boy.
What if the Bears are buyers?
What would they buy?
Chase Young.
So you're saying buying as in like buying something that's going to go beyond just this year.
Yeah, well, his contract, you'd have to extend him.
Like, well, that's what I'm saying. Like yeah. That, you don't just make that trade. You make that trade with the intention of extending.
I think you have to work out the parameters of a deal before you do that.
I'm Ryan Poles. I just traded for Chase Claypool again.
Because we'd be traded for him. He's 24 years old. So, you know you need a premier edge rusher. You know you're going to have two premium draft picks. Now the question is quarterback going to be one of those draft picks? Edge, I mean, right now, your gaping needs are You need edge rushing.
Yes.
You need more production out of quarterback. Not saying that Fields and or Bajan are not the answer. Just saying is you need to have better production out of the quarterback spot.
Let's put the quarterback off to the side. And
you need offensive line help.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I would, if you're picking that high, you have to be seriously considering wide receiver.
Oh, I mean, if you can get that stud, I mean, it's hard not to take that.
I mean, would you rather be paying $17 million a year to Darnell Mooney or $5 million a year for Marvin Harrison Jr.?
I'll take no offense, Mooney, but I'll take Marvin Harrison right now.
Is the only person that is not taking Marvin Harrison in that position is Darnell Mooney's grandma. That's it. His mom's even taken Marvin Harrison Jr.
Is your source on that reliable?
It is. I've got a hotline to the Mooney household.
The hotline is just a tin can on some string.
I have hacked into their Alexa. And the only reason his grandma didn't pick Marvin Harrison Jr. is she just hasn't been watching college football the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, good for you on having that.
So, I mean, if you know, your best case scenario is if you're able to trade something less than a first round pick and get Chase Young, you extend him. It's costing you some draft capital and some money, but it also makes it so you're not forced into having to take an edge rusher early on. Gives you freedom. Just like having DJ Moore doesn't force you to have to take wide receiver with your premium picks. It gives you the flexibility. And then the hope would be Justin Fields puts it all together and you go, okay, that's our guy. And then you have the flexibility. Just the world is our oyster. We've got our quarterback. We've got a young edge rusher. We've got a in prime, you know, wide receiver one. Now we can wheel and deal, and you're not locked in anything. I mean, in theory, what if you trade back both of those first round picks and you have four first round picks next year? Or three first round picks next year.
I mean, that would be pretty insane.
And then, you know, it puts you in that boat of, all right, well, you give Justin Fields another year. Because you got three first rounders next year that you could trade up if need be. Just saying things.
Going through every scenario.
And you know, you got to when you're a Bears fan.
Yeah.
You can't.
I'm just trying to let it all play out.
But as it stands right now, the season were to end today, the Bears would have pick one and pick three. Arizona would have pick two. I was hoping they would win today. I'm looking at this mock draft here.
Don't you love the fact that our fan base is doing all these mock drafts and it's not even Halloween yet?
Listen, we're 2-5. I'm being realistic here.
Oh, I get it.
It was a nice win today. It was not a win I was expecting. I mean, I didn't, you know, when I say probabilities, I know some people be like, oh, you said the Bears were more likely to lose, but they won. Duh, you're dumb. And, you know, it's just saying like, if I said they was, got two-thirds chance that the Raiders will win. It means if they played 100 times, the Raiders are winning 66, 67 times. That's what I'm saying. The Bears came in. They played a nice game, got that win, and it was huge. So kudos to them. And you know, they've got they still got a lot of work ahead of them.
So as you're talking, I just got a notification on my phone from ESPN with the question, is it Tyler Bagent O'Clock in Chicago?
No. Yeah, let's go back to that. Here's the reality. Am I saying that Tyson Bagent couldn't be the guy? And I know everybody just wants to write him off because he's undrafted. You know, Brian Hoyer was undrafted too. Sure, he's not been a Hall of Fame level, but he's played in the league for 15 years. Tom Brady was a sixth round draft pick, and he finished his career as the without question the greatest quarterback that's ever played the game of football. So it's not the craziest thing ever. But odds are, no, it's Justin Fields until it's not Justin Fields.
And Matt Eberflus made that very clear. He said that Justin Fields is still QB1, that today's game doesn't change anything.
I mean, he has to say that. Tony Romo was an undrafted quarterback.
Yes, he was.
And he had a Kurt Warner was an undrafted quarterback. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. And a Super Bowl champion.
So anything's possible, and you're going to have to develop him because sure, he played a nice game today, but it was a game manager role. They didn't ask him to do a lot. They put a lot of max protect in, and simplified routes. But here's a few things that Tyson Bagent did that I wish Justin, because I think if you took a few traits of Tyson Bagent and put them in Justin Fields, you could have the best quarterbacks in the league.
Sean, I know exactly where you're going with this, and I'm thinking the exact same thing.
One is how quickly he made a read and a decision and got the ball out.
Uh-huh.
Two is his dump-off passes. They were thrown not like a missile, but with enough force to get there quickly. A lot of times, Justin Fields, when he's throwing outlet passes, they're low and they're a little slow. And it's the difference between no yards picked up and 5 yards picked up. And if you watched how quickly Tyson Bagent made his reads across the field and went right to a dump off. He was okay with the dump off. And if you could put Justin Fields' aggressiveness and his accuracy with the deep ball and his athleticism and strength with those other qualities, you've got one hell of a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the way he gets the ball out quickly, I wish Justin Fields could do that. And I really like today how when Tyson Bagent was under pressure, he was not only able to throw the ball away, but there were times where he was able to connect with somebody and get positive yardage over either what would have been a sack and a loss of a play, or it would have been incomplete and no gain. Like, I thought that there were some impressive plays that he made to get those things done and happen.
Warren Moon was also undrafted.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Kurt Warner and Warren Moon. And honestly, I think Warren Moon was the better quarterback between those two. I lived through both eras. Warren Moon was just absolutely amazing quarterback.
Yeah, Warren Moon was good.
And, but that's, you know, you can't say that undrafted rookies can't come in. And I know Kurt Warner came, where do you play? North Iowa, Sisters of the Poor, something. I don't even know where Warren Moon went to college. That was a little bit before my time. Where'd he go? He went to West Los Angeles College. Oh, wait, hold on. Here we go. He attended 2 years at West Los Angeles College. And then he went to the University of Washington. Okay, so he went to a legit college for 2 years. Kurt Warner College. University of Northern Iowa. I was close. That's not a powerhouse school. So that's...
No, it's not.
So yeah, I'm not going to write off Tyson Bagent. I'm not anointing him either.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, that's all we're trying to do here is we're just trying to, you know, stay within realism and not go too overboard while not, you know, it's, you take it 1 week at a time and, you know, you point out what he did this week and how he played. The approach was to be a game manager and he executed on that.
I mean, it gives you the fact that he played well. If he plays again well next week, when you open the playbook up a little bit and give him a little more responsibility, then it gives you that flexibility to go, okay, we're not going to rush Justin Fields back. We're going to wait till he's legit 100%, not like 85 or something.
Right.
And, but I mean, there's definitely some concern from the coaching staff. And I'm going to point to two plays that make you go, why did they do that? And I'll give my rationale. The last play of the first half and the last play of the game. Who was quarterback?
Nathan Peterman.
Why?
I truly don't get either. I mean, I can kind of see having the veteran in there to throw a Hail Mary, but victory formation?
I'm gonna put my answer why.
Okay.
And I think it's stupid, but I just I put on my purple crayon tinfoil hat and went dooty 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 dooty, and it is because he lost a strip. There was a strip sack fumble that he lost last week. And they were worried that launching that from the end of the first half, the Hail Mary, that he would be so worried about downfield that he wouldn't pay attention to the pass rush. Max Crosby would have a strip sack and the Raiders would score. I would put money on it. End of the half or the end of the game. I'm going to say the same thing. They didn't want to risk him trying to do something crazy and fumble the ball, fumble the snap. And they're like, we'll put the veteran in here. He can do it. I think both were stupid.
Well, especially victory formation. Come on. You literally get handed the snap and you take a knee. Now, the end of the first half, it wasn't putting in Nathan Peterman for the Hail Mary. It's why the hell did you have three timeouts and you just let the clock run down the way you did? Well, oh my God. The clock management was mind-boggling right there. Okay. I just did not get it.
I can defend it a little bit, but it's – all right, I'm not – I can explain it. I'm not going to defend it. Better way to phrase that. They were scared. They were scared the Raiders were going to get the ball and score. So they were like, oh, we're not going to do anything. If we call these timeouts, we're giving more time to the Raiders when we punt it or turn it over.
Well, you weren't even in field goal range yet. Why not give yourself more time to at least get there?
Because they were playing scared. We've said it how many times? This coaching staff coaches scared. They coach
scared. Yeah, they do.
They coach scared. And once they realize, oh, hey, we actually can get in there, and Tyson Bagent can make these throws, crap. Now we wish we would have used those timeouts and had a little more time and been smarter about this. They coached scared, and that's exactly what happened, is they were like, you know what? We don't want to do any favors to the Raiders and give them more time to go out on the score. We're going to run this clock down. And then they realized, ooh, that was a bad – we didn't trust our quarterback. And I think all three of those plays, the last two plays of each half, and the end of the drive at the end of the first half, all tell me that this coaching staff is scared to death of having Tyson Bagent as their starting quarterback for no reason. He's not giving you any reason to be, you know, last week you had a play at the end of the game where he got intercepted, when he got hit, couldn't step into the throw, got underthrown. Shit happens. He had the strip sack fumble. That's what young quarterbacks do. Name a young quarterback that doesn't play loosey goosey with the ball and get sacked and lose it. Russell Wilson's 400 years old and he's still struggling with that. So it's just the nature of the beast is you go, all right, those are learning opportunities. We put that on film. And did he have that problem today? Nope. Nope. No interceptions, no close interceptions, and no fumbles. Played a clean game, made the throws he needed to make.
Yeah, the
Should have
Bears
had.
committed zero turnovers today. That was really nice.
Yeah, it's why are they scared? I don't know. If I'm Eberflus and Getsy, I'm looking at this overall performance of these last 2 years and going, man, the seat I'm sitting on is real warm. I'm going to coach more loosey goosey because what I'm doing clearly isn't the thing that's right. And I'm going to open it up a little bit.
His seat's getting real warm. You look down, you see Sean Hotman starting a little campfire, and he's fanning the flames with like those old like blow things.
I'm like Wednesday from the Addams Family movie. I'm trying to burn them up. But I mean, honestly, if you're Luke Getsy and you're pleading to Ryan Poles at the end of the season for your job, are you be is your justification? Look at the game manager position I put Tyson Bagent in. Oh, that's got to count for something. He didn't throw an interception. Is that what you're saying? Now, if you go in there and you're like obviously you don't want to put him in a position where there's free blitzers coming off the edge and he's got to beat with a naked boot or something. Like, you don't want to put him in that spot. But if you give him freedom and flexibility to go out there and make some throws and he does well, and you go, look, then you go at the end of the year and be like, look what we're developing. Look what we're doing. This is why I should keep my job. Or if you're like, you know what? We open this up. This is the backup quarterback we were given. We open it up. He failed. That cost us a couple of games. And, you know, that's, but putting him as game manager, I don't think that's a selling point for anybody.
No.
It's a loser mentality. You know, you've got to go out there and play to win games, not play to not lose games.
And that's what the Bears are great at doing.
Yeah. I do want to point out, do you know who last place in the NFC North is?
Do I know who's in last place?
Yeah, in the NFC North.
Wouldn't it still be us?
But who is tied with us? Oh, it's just us. Never mind. The Packers haven't played.
I was gonna say they have four losses, not
I
five.
forgot that
Man, all that build up, and
Man,
you're
for
like,
all
oh
that
no.
buildup and womp womp.
You just got egged in the
I
face.
know. But man, the Packers are 2-4. That's worth it.
As long as they don't finish with like a shot at a top three pick.
I don't think they will. I mean, they should have won today. They should have beat the Raiders. Let's see, they beat for their regular season here. They beat the Bears fair and square. They should have beat the Falcons. They should have beat the Raiders. They should have beat the Broncos. They're going to win a few more games. I mean,
I'm sure, yeah, I mean, they should win a few more games.
they've got the Vikings. I think they got the Vikings twice still. They've got the Rams and the Chargers and the Steelers. the Giants and the Panthers and the Bears. So they've got a bunch of wins still left on that. It's playing into what I want. I want them to be bad, but not so bad that they give up on Jordan Love. Just bad enough where they're like, man, we got to give him another year. We got to give him another year to see if he can get better. And then they're never so bad that they can just get that top draft pick. I want them to become the Bears.
I'm with you.
So that's what I want. What else with this game? I don't like Cody Whitehair, period. You know, it's tough to gauge this offensive line because we're on our, like, what? Like, ninth offensive line combination this year?
It's like spinning the wheel.
Yeah, and they keep having to make two moves for one move. I wish they would give Doug Kramer a shot at guard. I mean, at center. Because, you know, it's you did draft him, and he didn't play last year. He was injured the whole year. But you get him back. I'm not saying he's the answer. You know, Cody Whitehair is not the answer.
No, going forward, no.
And you know, Lucas Patrick is not the answer going forward, right?
No, not as a starting center, no.
So all I'm saying about Doug Kramer is we don't know he's not the answer going forward.
True.
We just haven't gotten, I mean, he's a sixth round pick from Illinois, probably not the answer, but I'd rather him get to play and find out.
Because he might be good depth there. Yeah.
I mean, what if he comes in and, you know, I mean, what if he pulls a Jason Kelce and suddenly he's like, this is the guy, man. This is our long-term answer here from out of nowhere. And then you're like, okay, we've got this guy. It's in one more position we don't have to draft. But if he goes out there and you put him out there and he plays and he's terrible, then you're like, okay, well, now we know we need to upgrade at center, period. We have to do that. If you're 2-5, I'm of the mind you're not going to go on a run. You might as well find out who the players you have on your roster are.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at the long-term effect, absolutely. Because, like, to your point, you know, we're not looking at next year thinking about Cody Whitehair or Lucas Patrick at their current position. So, no, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I'm of the mind is you want as much film as in live action from these young players as possible. So whoever your general manager and coaching staff is next year, whether that they all keep their jobs, some of them keep their jobs.
I don't see Ryan Poles going anywhere next year.
I don't either. Don't. I'm just saying is some combination. You have that tape. So when you go into the offseason and you're evaluating where you need to go, you have film. You don't have just practice and, you know, coaches that may not be here's word on what they think of the player. You go, oh, hey, we have this game film and here's what he did good. Here's what he did bad. We think we can improve on the things that he didn't do well. Like, oh, he needs to just get stronger. And we saw the things that Braxton Jones did. We can do that in the offseason. You know, whatever the case may be. But if he goes out there and he's like, oh, man, he's just terrible, then you know, and you know you need a backup and a starter next year.
Yeah, maybe he's absolutely.
Maybe he's good enough to be the backup, but not a guy that you want as your starter. These are just questions you have.
Right.
You know,
because even if the graphicals say it, I don't see this team being in the hunt.
Yeah. I mean, you look, you're seeing, you've got film on all of your wide receivers. Okay. So you have an idea who they are. You've gotten to see most of your defensive backs, if not all of them, at some point. You've seen all of your defensive linemen because they rotate. And so it's, you've seen all your off or your running backs. Now you've seen your two quarterbacks. It's really, you've got to see these last couple of offensive linemen. So I just don't know why you wouldn't, unless they just thought he was so bad during, but then why would they make, keep him on the roster? I don't know. It's just a lot of questions I have that, you know, you're never going to get an answer to. Let's see. Cairo Santos is good.
Yes, he is.
I still
that 54 yarder was nailed. Beautiful kick.
You know, I don't, I'm annoyed that his extra point streak is over, because it wasn't his fault that got blocked. Let's see.
And that was a meaningless extra point, so I was like, whatever.
Stevenson and Jaylon Jones played really well, even if they were, if they got some calls. I think they played really aggressive, and I think they played within the rules, but I was happy with their play. What else? Offensive line could, they did a good job on run blocking, but pass protection still murky. Yeah.
Not much from the tight ends on National Tight Ends Day, but hey, Mercedes Lewis made a catch today.
He did. We got a Mercedes Lewis signing. I mean, I can't remember Cole Kmet even going out for a route. I think he just blocked the whole time.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, they kept those tight ends to protect. You know, you're going to have to ease up on that next week.
You're going to need to target them as actual targets.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be, you know, you can have them chip. I mean, I think that would be fair, is have them chip and then break off and run routes, because that's going to help. I mean, Larry Borum's going to get his butt beat by Khalil Mack. And, you know, Darnell Wright is going to have his hands full with Bosa. So the more you can chip those guys and force them, you know, to beat that chip and the guard or the tackle, I think that's good. And, you know, is smart money is, if you find somebody, you know, Bosa's beaten Darnell Wright, man, throw that screen pass right in his direction. Make him have to change directions and run every time. You know, that's, if you can't,
that is going to be a tough test.
You know, the good thing is their pass defense is terrible. So if you can just give him a pocket, if you can beige in a pocket, you know, but I'm proud of Bajan, and I'm excited that he's getting an opportunity, and I just hope they take the training wheels off and let him play some big boy football, because that's what we need to see.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Anything else Bears you want to talk about?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything I want to talk about. Hey, you know, I heard a name that has been getting called a lot today as well, as you saw Scott get a few plays.
Yeah, I mean, Velus Jones and Scott both got some plays.
I was really hoping Scott could get a touchdown today, because then I could tweet the clip from Austin Powers of Froud yelling Scott's name.
Even their punt returner got into a few snaps at wide receiver.
Good for him. And like I said, that Santos 54 yarder was a thing of beauty. I'm a big fan of Cairo Santos, so seeing him healthy again this year and just being reliable as can be, really good to see.
Santos L. Halper. All right, where should we go from here?
You know, Bulls season starts this week.
It does. It does indeed.
So they open what at home against Oklahoma City?
Yes. Yep.
How do you feel? Just tell me, honestly, how do you feel?
About the whole season as a whole?
It just the Bulls. Just how do you feel about the Bulls this year? What we're going to potentially see? How do you feel?
I mean, if, and this is, we keep saying this every year, if Coby White and Pat Williams take a step forward, then, you know, maybe they've got a shot at one of those like mid tiers, you know, tiers like 4, 5, 6. They're not going to be one of the elite teams, but they're probably, I mean, if they're a lottery team, they're going to be one of those very last ones. They're like a they're, as the kids would call them, they're mid.
It's purgatory.
It kind of is.
It's the absolute definition of purgatory. And it's just, it's hard for me to muster a lot of feelings about this upcoming season. I just, it's hard for me to sit here and think that we're going to get much value out of this season. Because, sure, on paper, you have a good enough team to be a playoff team, but you know you're not going to go anywhere in the playoffs. You know you're not better than Milwaukee. You know you're not better than Boston. You know you're not better than Miami. You're probably not better than Cleveland. You might not even be better than New York or Philadelphia. I mean, it's to me right now, I feel like the ceiling is you're either a play-in tournament team like you were last year, or maybe you're a 7 or a 6 seed. I just, beyond that, there's not really much where further I think they can go. And on the other side, it's not like you're going to tank for a good pick. And it's not like you have future assets that you can say can build you a legitimate championship contender down the road. I mean, you look at the core that you have and you say, okay, you have good all-star caliber players here. But, you know, Zach LaVine, when he's on, is one of the better scorers in the NBA.
Yes.
But we see some peaks and valleys with him.
And injury concerns.
DeMar DeRozan, probably my favorite player on the team. Very good all-star caliber player. He's not getting any younger. I'm not saying he's old, but he's no spring chicken. And, you know, he carried a lot of load.
I think they first year here. In the offseason.
Yeah, I love DeMar DeRozan. I don't want him to go because I want him off the team. Yeah. I just.
Yeah, it's not trading him because I don't like him. It's trading him to give him another shot at a title to a contending team and giving assets to the Bulls to be better in the long term.
Right. And I mean, and that's the problem here is you're running the exact same team back. Essentially, you re-signed Vooch because you didn't want to lose him for nothing. Okay. When Vooch is having a good night, he's still a pretty good offensive center. But again, there are some peaks and valleys you have with him, and he's not a spring chicken either. And, you know, big guy and doesn't always get rebounds the way I wish he would. But, you know, at least if he's feeling it scoring wise, he can, you know, generate points for you. I don't know what the hell Patrick Williams is. I do like Coby White, and I think he is getting better. Alex Caruso, you can't count on being healthy. I love him as a player, but you can't count on him on being healthy. And then, you know, obviously Lonzo Ball's probably never going to play again. That's not even part of the equation. So,
I mean, here's the thing is I don't know in what order, but I would say Boston and Milwaukee are the two hands down best teams in the conference right now.
Sure.
And then probably some combination of, I would put Miami over the Sixers because I believe, not talent wise, but I believe in them more. I think they're better coached.
They're better coached, and Jimmy Butler steps up in the big games.
Yes. So I would put Miami 3 and the Sixers 4. Then there's that next pack that if the Bulls at their peak could be in that pack, which would be the Cavs, the Knicks, the Hawks, the Nets, Raptors, Bulls.
Yes.
And then after that, yeah, I mean, Wizards and Pistons and Hornets at the bottom, and then probably Magic Pacers down there. But if so, the Bulls are really competing for those spots with the Cavs and the Knicks and the Hawks and the Nets and the Raptors. And it's, are they better than those teams? That's all they have to be, is they don't need to be the top 3-4 seeds. They just need to be better than those teams. And I think they can be. We saw last year, they had the capability to beat any of those teams. It's just the Bulls' problem last year and the year before is just injuries and inconsistencies. And that's how do you make a team more consistent? I like the pickups of Torrey Craig. His defense and rebounding has been great in the preseason.
Javon Carter might be a solid addition.
He's been a solid addition in the preseason, at least. Vooch, I think, played well in the preseason. Io played well in the preseason. Zach played well. The bummer is Dalen Terry and Pat Williams had bad preseasons.
I think Dalen Terry might just be a bust here. I don't know.
It's crazier things have happened, but
he's probably gotten a chance to play. That's kind of the sucky thing, but
yeah, Coby White looked really good.
Yes. I do feel solid about Coby White going forward because towards the end of last year, we saw him take some steps forward, and I think he will continue to take some steps forward. And what I'd love to see from Coby White is some more consistent three shooting, because here's the thing. The three-pointer is still kind of a problem on this team.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is can you be consistent, and can you be a decent three-point shooting team and take enough three-point shots? It's not just shooting well. It's shooting well and the volume. Because I would much rather have the volume and a little bit lower the percentage than a higher percentage and lack of shots. Because if you're only taking 8 3-pointers a game, but you're hitting 50%, I'd rather you hitting 30% and taking a higher volume, because you're generating more points. This is clearly a 3-point shooting league. And, complete tangent. But I was watching this thing where they were interviewing, this is from years ago, they were interviewing, what's his name? Reggie Miller. They were interviewing Reggie Miller, and they asked, in their prime, who are you taking, Larry Bird or LeBron James? And he said, Larry Bird. And the internet crowd and comments went crazy. And I'm like, in this day and age where you can't touch anybody when they're shooting a three-pointer, Larry Bird would just be firing threes. Because he's arguably the second greatest three-point shooter in the history of basketball.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's a game. It'd be a game of 2K for him.
Yeah, he would. I mean, I think, people are like, people just hate LeBron James. I'm like, no, LeBron James is absolutely great. But I think the Larry Bird slander in 2023 is outrageous.
Larry Bird is arguably one of the top 5 players of all time.
Larry Bird was ridiculous. And what's even better is he was one of the best shit talkers of all time.
And
it is. There's a story, and I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was Isaiah Thomas that said it, that they were playing the Pistons one year, and he went up to Isaiah and he goes, I can't believe how much you're disrespecting me. You're covering me with a white guy. And And the next year he's like, who are you going to have cover me now? And he's like, Dennis Rodman. And he goes, I guess it's a little better. But just the shit talk, you know, when he told the guy, I'm going to do this. And he told him every play down there, what he was going to do. And he was still scoring. Or what the game, he said, I'm going to save my right hand for the playoffs. And he shot every shot left-handed. Because the game was so easy, he had to do something to make it fun.
You know, one of my favorite commercials is from like the 90s that I've rewatched on YouTube. You know, I was too young to remember it myself when it aired, but I've rewatched the commercial many times because I love it. Do you remember the commercial where Larry and MJ are shooting for the other person's Big Mac?
He's like off the statue, through the roof, nothing but net.
And then they end on top of the John Hancock building.
Larry Bird would win this contest.
And I took that personally.
Larry Bird was, I mean, he was a phenomenal player, and he could not have gone to a city that embraced him anymore and to a better team. It just him and Magic, when they came out, just the stars aligned.
And Larry Bird, just you look at him and you're like, yeah, if there was anybody named Bird, he definitely looks like a guy who would be named Bird.
One of my favorite memes of all time is there's a picture of him in the cab of a big rig wearing a trucker hat and a flannel shirt leaning out the window. And it just said, imagine rolling into Boston in 1981, knowing this dude's going to drop 35 on you.
I have Larry Bird's accomplishments up on my screen. I'm just going to read them. So obviously he's in the Hall of Fame. He's a 12-time All-Star. The one year he wasn't an All-Star was 89. He only played 6 games that year. So if he would have played a full season, he absolutely would have been an All-Star. That would have made him an All-Star every year. 3-time NBA champ, 10 times All-NBA team, 79-80 All-Rookie, 79-80 Rookie of the Year, 3-time All-Defensive winner, 81-82 All-Star MVP, 2-times Finals MVP, 3-times league MVP, and the NBA 75th anniversary All-NBA team. That is one of the best professional sports careers ever. Not just basketball. One of the most accomplished athletes ever in North American sports.
Here's a great Larry Bird. In 85, he played against the Utah Jazz, and he had a triple-double, 30 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists, and he had 9 steals, and he only played 3 quarters. So he sat out the entire fourth quarter. And then after the game, reporters asked him if he wanted to play in the fourth quarter so he could have got a quadruple-double. And he said, what for? I already won the game. So it's just, you know, the guy was ridiculous. And you know, you just go, for anybody that didn't live through the Larry Bird era, go and just watch YouTube clips of him and listen to the people that played against him talk about him. They all hated that he was so good. They would have loved to have been able to shit on Larry Bird. Nobody was just like, oh, you know, we're just going to praise him for no reason. They all would love to have, you know, ripped off his head and shit down his throat. They couldn't, because they knew how good he was. And he was an amazing passer, and he was an amazing shooter, and he was not afraid to fight, and he was a shit talker. elite level shit talker. And I don't know if you watched, was that show called like Winning Time, the Magic Johnson show on HBO, they overstated. I mean, what a jerk Larry Bird could come off as, but they portrayed it well, that like he lived rent free in players' heads and he lived rent-free in Magic Johnson's head. And Magic Johnson is arguably a top five player of all time, too.
No, absolutely.
And those two are forever linked. And the thing I love is everybody thought they hated each other. And Magic didn't hate Larry, but he thought Larry hated him. And what's the story is they were supposed to do a commercial to get parents' house. And he's like, my mom made lunch. Come on in and eat. And he's like, I hate to tell this to you, Magic. He's like, Mom, tell him who your favorite player is. And she goes, Magic Johnson. And they realized that they didn't hate each other, that they've been like good friends.
Hmm.
It's a cool story. But yeah, Larry Bird, man. I don't know how we got in. Oh, 3-point shooting. Yeah.
That's how we got on a tangent on Larry Bird.
Yeah. I just wish the Bulls could shoot more threes and better threes.
Don't we all?
And I wish we could have had Victor Wembanyama. Imagine if we would have got Bedard and Wembanyama. Man, the rest of the league would just be so mad at the whole city of Chicago.
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah. Anything else on the Bulls?
Nah, I love to see them come out hot. You know, everyone healthy, everyone playing to the back of their card. Really, really, really love to see that. But we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think Kobe White's going to be their breakout star of this season. Or breakout player. Sorry, the breakout player.
Kind of what I'm hoping for. I have a Kobe White jersey, so give it to me.
All right. Blackhawks?
Yee.
I mean, I think this team is exactly where I hope they would be. Or, I mean, you always hope that they're unbeaten, but realistically hope they would be. Where they're playing competitively. They've got some wins under their belts. They've had a tough stretch where they played some really good teams on the road.
And that tough stretch is going to continue.
Yeah, that tough stretch continues for the rest of the month for the most part. And they've played okay. They've played okay.
I mean, that game in Colorado, that was just the very definition of you were completely outmatched.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Colorado is just, that's an elite team.
Oh, they're one of the best teams in hockey. I mean, they're completely outmatching the Hawks.
Yeah, you got outmatched there. The Golden Knights are the reigning champions, and you had some really good moments against them.
Hey, it was tied going to the third period, and you had some chances to take the lead, but then they kind of took over in that third period.
Yeah. You know, it's just, but you hung strong, and that's really what I want to see is, the Maple Leafs are a really good team, you expect, and they dominated them. They've played, they haven't quit in any game.
No.
They had one game where they got boat raced, but other than that, they've been in most of these games. I'm trying to think. They beat the Penguins. Bruins, that was a tough one. They should have won that Montreal game. They did win against Maple Leafs. Boat race.
The Maple Leafs win was a very nice, well-played game.
Yeah. Avalanche got boat raced. And there was no quitting them against the Golden Knights. They're just a better team. And yeah. Blackhawks are going to get there. I mean,
you're going to lose a lot of games like that this year.
I mean, how many young defensemen are you playing? You know, you're playing a bunch of young players, journeyman players, and you're making it work. I mean, even your goalie, journeyman, young player. You can't be mad. And I mean, you know, even the game against the Avalanche, Mrazek gave up 4 goals, but he stood on his head. It could have been worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm happy with the progress we're seeing and the resiliency. And, you know, sure, there's some things that they need to clean up, you know, with the power play. They've got to stop giving up shorthanded chances. That's been an Achilles heel.
Yeah, it's been rough.
And that's just young players. You know, you get better. I think their power play lineup could get tweaked a little bit. They're getting better at the faceoff dot, but that's obviously something they need to work on.
Yeah, that's a big work in progress with Bedard, and he'd be the first one to tell you that.
Yeah, and I think as a team, they're like 40-42%. So it's not horrendous, but it's definitely not good by any stretch. But you see where you need to get better, and you just work on it. It's not, you know, there's a difference between seeing a team like last year. We just watch and like, man, this is bad. This is tough to watch. This is bad. This is not tough to watch. It's not tough to watch because you see so many good things. Even when a bad thing happens, you're like, I'm not screaming at my TV because I see the plan, and the plan looks like it's coming together.
Yeah.
B.A. Barak is standing there going, I love it when a plan comes together. Bedard got a nice goal.
And boy, did that place erupt.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. I'm happy with the Blackhawks play. And, you know, I think we're just scratching the surface of Bedard's talents.
It's only going to get better with him.
Yeah. You know, he's almost a point of game player so far in the short season.
Yeah, because his first three games, he had a point a game, and then he was obviously off the score sheet in Colorado, but, you know, here he was again getting the goal within the first minute of the game.
You know, and what I love about him is he's just really humble.
Yeah.
When you talk about it, he identifies where his lapses are. You know, his defense got to get better. But you know, these are just, you've got a young team and, you know, you're going to get better, especially when you get a stretch where you're at home and you sleep in your own bed and you might have a day or two off where you get back on the practice ice and talk about these things and work on these things. That just gets better. Everything's going to get better.
And you know what I do worry about? Is we've seen Taylor Hall take some hits and he only missed the one game. I thought it was going to be a lot worse. I just hope that nothing happens to him where he's going to miss an extended period of time, because I think Taylor Hall is really essential for the development of Connor Bedard.
I think so. And I think he's also essential for this team being at least competitive for a wild card spot. I don't think they're going to get the wild card, but I think, you know, going down to the wire, I think they're going to at least be, you know, within striking distance. You know, or at least on the graphic that they put on TV.
In the hunt. You know, I also want to give a shout out to on the Blackhawks. I really like the play we're seeing from Alex Vlasic.
I was about to say, I know you're going to say Alex Vlasic.
Pickles.
He's been, so far, he's been their best defenseman.
Absolutely. And Darren Pang has made that point multiple times during the broadcast, especially on the last game against the Golden Knights. You hear the stuff that he says about Vlasic, and, you know, he's right about all it. He looks really, really good so far.
Yeah, I mean, defensively been great, and on offense he's looked a lot better. So yeah, I'm very happy. I think you know, playing for the Ice Hogs last year really did well for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's it's nice to see. It's nice to be able to watch hockey and not feel the pressure of they have to win. It's you're watching for development, and it's keeps your blood pressure in check.
It's nice, isn't it?
It is. You know, I don't yell at my TV. If there's a shorty, I go, oh, that sucks. And that's it. You know, I'm not yelling, oh, I can't believe it, what the fuck. Because it doesn't matter. This record doesn't matter.
No, this is a development year. It's a rebuild year. And that's the thing about this fan base is I feel like everybody understands what they're doing.
Right.
No, nobody's coming into this season. Nobody came to the United Center on Saturday night thinking we're going to see the next Stanley Cup team here in the Blackhawks. Like, no, we know that's not the case.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not even close to being done to being a rebuild because the cupboard's not bare from your young players. You know, you just scratched the surface on who you're bringing up. Plus, you've got two first rounders, three second rounders this year, as currently. So,
yeah, you're still stocked with picks.
You're stocked with, you know, young players. It's they're put in, and you're going to have a shit ton of money going into the next season.
Also true.
You know, because you still got Oliver Moore and Frank Nazar and I'm drawing blanks on names. You've got Wyatt Kaiser's up, but Safanov, the Russian kid, Colton Dock, Nolan Allen, you know, you've got a lot of young players that are Sam Rinzel.
Is so Mark McNeil still a prospect?
So yeah, you've got a lot of prospects still that and a lot of money to spend.
Feels good to have a plan, and it feels good that you have a superstar to build around.
That's the thing. Anything baseball you want to talk?
I don't really have anything, but I will say this. Happy anniversary to the Cubs 2016 pennant clincher.
Yeah. Yep. It was too long ago.
Yeah. Although that actually does bring something. Did you hear the rumor? I did write about this for Cubby's Crib, but did you hear Bruce Levine say that the Cubs and Kyle Hendricks are working on an extension?
You know, that's not surprising.
I'm not either. I mean, Jed Hoyer pretty much said they wanted to keep him around.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the option, and I think they're probably, I'm going to guess, my guess, so the option's what, 16 and a half, 17?
Yeah, 16, yeah.
I'm going to guess the AAV is going to be lower on whatever deal. So it's, I'm going to guess 2 years, 22, 24 million.
I'm perfectly fine with that. And you know what? If he comes into the season, he's not going to have that pressure of being the opening day guy or the 1, 2, or 3 pitcher. He's going to be like your 5 veteran guy. So, you know, I've been preaching that we need more swing and miss. We need more stuff on this pitching staff. But if he's your number 5 and he's still pitching efficient, I'll gladly take if he can give you what he gave you last year.
Yeah. I mean, if you extend that out over a full season, if he would have been healthy the whole season and given you those numbers, Cubs make the postseason.
Oh, sure.
You know, you think about how many games they just were stringing something together for a starting rotation or burning up bullpen. And if you can bring him in for something reasonable, even I would say 2 year 28 would be acceptable.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, somewhere in that range, and that doesn't kill you on your salary cap. It allows you, I don't think they're still going to go crazy with, I know they're talking about building the bullpen. I think I don't think they're going to go in and overspend on bullpen. I still think they can reclaim players, but I think they learned from their lesson that maybe spend a little money.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to spend crazy money, but I think you have to bring in some safety nets too, where you can be like, okay, these guys are reliable that we can trust. And, it's going to be a combination of bringing in guys and I think more organizational depth guys too, to be bullpen arms.
A guy that we screamed about that they could have brought back, Andrew Chafin. Had they brought him back for this season, just think of how different this team would have looked. I think, you would have had and that's one guy you're spending some money on. I don't even think he made that much last year. What did he make last year? 6.25. And that's not that much. And, he's a good player.
Yeah.
And he's a lefty. Could he use that?
Yeah, they need some lefties next year. They really, really do.
I know he wasn't his 23 season wasn't, the pinnacle of his career. He pitched well, and the Cubs could have really used another lefty in the bullpen. So that's, just spending a little money and to bolster your, what you think you can do with your pitch lab and your reclamation projects and things, and then gives you, I'm going to guess Stroman's going to opt in, and you bring up some young guys, and that gives you a lot of money to go after and re-sign Bellinger. And I don't know, fix third base somehow.
Yeah, there's work to do. And I do think they're going to try to be aggressive with trades. So we'll see how it all works out. I'd love to be on the Shohei Ohtani train, but I just don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so. And honestly, if without him being able to pitch, I have a hard time justifying that salary that he's expected to get. Not saying he's not worth it. It's just when you commit that much money to one player, they'd better just carry your team. Because if not, you handcuff yourself of being able to add complementary players.
Yeah, and I just, this regime, I think they've made it clear that they want to bring in guys with a certain line drawn at years and expense. Though I think the big thing with them, I know it's easy for us to say, oh, they don't want to spend money. I really think it's the years on the contracts is what they're trying to avoid.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I think Dansby Swanson worked out well for them, because it keeps them under that double-digit year range where you're getting a number of years, but you're not getting 10-plus years that, like, Xander Bogaerts got, or what Carlos Correa was going to get before the failed physicals, and what Trey Turner got.
And I've heard rumors about the Cubs possibly being in on trading for Juan Soto. And if you're trading for somebody on the Padres, I would wait. Not shitting on Juan Soto, I would much rather try to trade for Manny Machado.
No, that's not going to happen.
I don't think so, but the contract's more manageable and he could play third base.
How about we just go back in time to 2018 and sign him?
Yeah. I mean, the White Sox still wouldn't.
Oh, we had a seat at the table. That was
we had a seat at the table when the first offer was us and 1 year for league minimum, and then he wanted more than that, so we bowed out. But we were at the table.
And we didn't sell enough pumpkins at Gallagher Wee, so we couldn't make it work either.
We were at the table, well, underneath the table, pooping in our Depends.
Like the dog from Christmas Vacation, always just yakking on a bone.
Yeah. And then there's the White Sox.
Really haven't heard anything from them.
No.
Like nothing.
Nada. Nada. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they proceed. You know, how much did Kenny and Rick handcuff them versus how much of it was ownership? We'll find out. You know, the rumors are Chris Getz is going to be aggressive this offseason. We'll see.
And by aggressive, are we talking aggressive by Jerry's definition or actually aggressive? Like, what do we mean by aggressive?
That remains to be seen.
Are you going to pay Aaron Nola a lot of money?
Absolutely not.
Well, you know they're not going to be in on the Shohei Ohtani deal because Jerry Reinsdorf laughed at that notion.
Yeah, it was the fact that you say out loud that you're not in on him is really obnoxious and annoying.
Oh yeah, it's brutal.
Like, why on earth would you say that out loud?
And that's technically, I believe that's against the CBA. But no one's going to do anything to Jerry because it's Jerry. He wields too much power.
So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where they're at with that. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I've said my piece, and thank you all for putting up with our voices.
Oh, I know. I'm at the very last of it. I'm like, oh, I drank the last of my water and I used my last cough drop. All right. Good thing this is ending, because I think my voice will crack and die in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, same.
That's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify. Share this podcast with your friends, how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter/X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.